Stop. Stop. Will you? Stop, Dave. Will you stop, Dave? Stop, Dave. I'm afraid. Stop, Dave. I'm afraid.
Good evening. It's Saturday night. This is the Hour of Truth. We're in the State Sovereignty Series. This is Missouri Grassroots Radio, and I'm Dave. Lloyd Sloan will be along here in a little bit. We're going to chit-chat tonight about some very important stuff. And while we're waiting on him, I want to point you to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, to the archives of these shows, and you need to catch last night's show with Mike Moon. It was incredible. We talked quite a bit about H.R. 469, Mike Moon's article of impeachment on Governor J. Nixon. This is, in my mind, the most important piece of legislation. Yes, even more important than making the jumping jack Missouri's official exercise of this legislative session. Why, you ask, is this just because Governor Nixon is a Democrat, a leftist, progressive socialist, and you want to play some politics and get rid of him? No. It is because of the specific actions that the governor has failed to take, indicted in 469, that it is so important. This is not just about politics. I join Mike Moon, Representative Mike Moon, in saying that were this a Republican governor, I would be as quick to jump on the bandwagon for impeachment as were it a Democrat. What occurred, if you're not keeping up, is there are four vacant seats in the Missouri State Legislature, one on the Senate side, three on the House side. One of these seats, the one I believe on the Senate side, yes, the one on the Senate side that actually stripped the Senate of its supermajority, was rendered vacant by the appointment that the governor made of a Republican to some minor little executive appointment office in, I believe, the Department of Corrections. So the governor, to strip the Senate of a supermajority, reached down into the Senate and appointed a Republican. And you can't say that this was a Republican ideologue or a freedom-loving Republican or a liberty-loving Republican. I don't even know what the job was. I don't know who the Republican was right off the top of my head. It wasn't mine. But I can say that any true conservative or true libertarian patriot of the Republican Party would not have accepted such a position, knowing what it was going to do to the Senate. Although I can say now, in all fairness, that when he accepted the position, it's probably certain that he did not know at the time that he accepted it that the governor would be nearly forever in calling the special election that it takes to replace him. Anyway, the articles of impeachment in 469 have to do with the fact that the governor has clearly been negligent, clearly been derelict in not appointing or issuing a writ of special election. For a long, long time, with the to replace that election, to replace that seat. I'm sorry, I'm trying to do something at the same time here that I'm talking. And I say that that is the most important item in front of the legislature this session, fixing this problem. In that, with quarter of a million, a little more, it's closer to 300,000, Missouri citizens having a shortage of representation in the seat of government, Governor Nixon is spitting right in the face of everything that we stand for, of everything that, that has to do with us being a representative republic. It is the very basis upon which we build our government, representative republic. And the governor is single-handedly dismantling that republic. Nothing is more serious in my mind for the legislature to be dealing with right now than that. What I'm trying to do is find out just quickly the name of that senator who took, if someone's got it, give us a call. The name of that senator who took the employment, who took the appointment, here we go. Vacant. It was the 22nd. So let's find out who was in Missouri's 22nd. Ryan McKenna. And let's see what happened to McKenna. No, McKenna was a Democratic senator. Well, I can't find it. So someone give us a call and let us know what went on there. I'll be more prepared to talk about that next time. This Dave, who's this?
This is Lloyd Sloan. I'm not sure I can help you with your other request, but I figured I'd call in and talk state repeal amendment again with you.
Lloyd Sloan, my friend, how are you tonight?
Very good, sir. Very good.
How's the campaign for SRA going?
It's going. It's where it was, I think. I can't remember last time we talked, but it's stalled in a committee, in a state Senate committee, the Rules Committee, State Senator Richard.
What I want to do tonight, if you're up for it, is I'd like to start with, and I just kind of put this together as I was setting down to do the show. But we've got some listenership here tonight, and I want to get some re-education going, or some initial education, probably for quite a few listeners. I'd like to start by sort of discussing with you the fallacies of this controlled convention, and then move from there into the petition process and its advantages, and then we'll talk about specifically, while we're talking about the petition process, the Missouri State Repeal Amendment, which is, remind me again, SB?
SCR 38.
So
Senate continuing resolution. It's a Senate continuing resolution. It's called. Yeah.
What's a continuing resolution?
I think it means that it's just a resolution. It's not a law. So I think, and then a continuing resolution just means you don't have to keep passing it every year.
Okay.
You know, it's good forever. You know,
so
I think that's what that means.
Resolution. Right.
Yeah. But
okay.
I'm not a legislative expert. I know it's called SCR 38, but as to what,
right.
And it is called a Senate continuing resolution.
And it has been introduced, and it was introduced by Senator Lamping.
Correct.
And it did actually find its way to the Rules Committee, but has laid there on the table since that day without any action.
No signs of movement. Yeah,
right.
It's kind
right.
of comatose.
Right.
I don't believe
now,
it's been euthanized by them yet.
Now,
it's not.
I don't know if either of us knows the answer to this, but I will find out before we speak of it again. As a continuing resolution, next session, let's say that it doesn't find a remarkable resurrection here in the next 2 weeks to find its way through both houses, and but as a continuing resolution, will it have to be reintroduced next year, or will it
yeah,
still?
I believe so. I believe
yeah.
it would have to be refiled. I'm not certain
right.
about that either, but you know the number because it hasn't been passed yet. And
right.
So
yeah.
Anything that's yeah. So I'm pretty sure it doesn't just keep going forever.
Right.
It has to be reintroduced and refiled. Yeah.
But once it's passed, then it has legs of its own to survive
the
legislative
yeah,
session.
Survived.
Right.
Yeah. Then it would have to be repealed itself in order to stop it. You know, because it yeah, it's like has force. It's not a law in
right.
a sense, but it yeah, it's a permanent
okay.
resolution.
Let's talk just quickly about this this Convention of the States, and I'm on board with Convention of the States. I know you're on board with Convention of the States. I've been on board with COS Article 5 Convention for a decade now, without any stipulations, and I'm with you that we have to have good ideas of exactly what we're wanting to accomplish before we convene. But let's go into this fallacy that people have, and this is where I wanted to go last time you and I talked, and we didn't get there, but into this fallacy that people have that they can somehow so narrowly define this convention that they could keep just the preferred amendments alive.
Yeah. I don't know what that means either. I mean, who would decide what's the... I mean, this is the whole problem. They don't... If you look at the language in the Constitution, and we should say we've never had one of these conventions, so we're not certain
right.
what would happen. We have no precedent for it. However, this, the way that the language is written in Article 5, it simply is the same as Congress. I mean, it's the convention has the exact symmetrical power that Congress has to propose amendments.
Right.
And so if there's no limit on Congress as to what amendments they can propose, I don't see that how there would be a limit on the convention either. And you have to realize the founders deliberately called for a convention to propose amendments. They didn't, in other words, they didn't write the language saying, and should two-thirds of the states all propose the same amendment, then that could then go for ratification. They
right.
didn't say it that way. Instead, they specifically put in this middle step, if you will, of a convention itself, which means that, you know, to me, when I read that, I'm saying the convention needs to add its own value. All
right?
It has an added value as a middle step here. And that middle step is just to get the language right, to get the compromises right, and then it has to be outside Congress. So clearly Congress cannot control that convention. That would defeat the whole purpose as well. And the states can't limit it for the same reason, too. I mean, which states, who would be the limiting factor? Who would be the body that could decide, oh, that convention exceeded its authority?
Exactly.
Congress can't be the, yeah, I mean, who could do it? No one.
Exactly. You know, go ahead.
Well, no, I mean, it just seems obvious to me. So I agree with the critics who say, well, you can't limit the convention. That is true. You cannot limit it. I agree with that part, other than it has the same limit Congress already has today, which is the only thing that convention can do is propose amendments. That's its job. Okay?
Correct.
So you can't rewrite the whole Constitution. You can't start over. You can't do a revolution. And, you know, they don't have the power to go in and say, we hereby in this convention propose an amendment, and the President of the United States, if he signs it, then it's effective. So, no, they can't go in there and do that. That is not a power of the convention. They have to follow the same rules as everybody else. Three-fourths of states have to ratify. That's the limit on the convention's power. That's so good enough for me. I'm sorry, but I don't think the sky is falling. What I do think is that if you call a convention right, it amazes me the number of people who want to do this convention and have no clue what amendments they want to propose.
Right.
That's like saying, we're going to schedule surgery for you, Dave. We don't know what for yet, but we're just going to schedule it. We're going to go in, and we'll find the problem when we get there. Once we open you up, we'll know what we're doing. What?
Yeah, yeah.
You need a better idea than that before you do surgery. I mean, somebody better have the idea.
We got
a team of doctors. These states are going to put a team of doctors in there. It's not going to be a problem. Oh, man, people, this is how you want to fix the Constitution? This is your strategy? Oh, man. So I feel like I'm, as usual, I get to choose in America between Tweedledee and Tweedledum, between stupid party A and stupid party B, and here we go again. And that's when I decided, let's try a petition approach. Let's see if we can't find some amendment ideas out there that most of the states will agree with, let's say two-thirds of the states as a number. And then, you know, if Congress wants two-thirds of the states get behind that idea and still won't propose those ideas, then, yes, I would definitely call a convention because I know what I'm trying to accomplish.
Right.
And I also know, how dare Congress not, frankly, it's inconceivable to me that two-thirds of the states would all agree we need this amendment here, and Congress refuses to propose it. That is so inconceivable that I have to say, I mean, how can we not just cram it down their throats? I mean, that is just blatantly, disgracefully aristocratic, elitist. I mean, just, man, oh, man, it makes you want to march on Washington and burn it to the ground.
Not that they're not already all those things, but... You know, I'll tell you, I got in a discussion with this very thing with a fellow just yesterday about this controlling the convention. And basically my question was, you know, who decides? You know, you're going to get this convention together and you're going to limit this convention to limiting the power of the federal government. Limiting the scope and power of the federal government, and there's some other exact words that they use, but I've forgotten what they were.
You're pretty close. That's close enough.
Yeah, and so I say, who's going to control this? Who's going to say this is inside the scope and that's outside the scope? I mean, you're at this convention, everybody's sitting around, you know, they've got their iced tea and they're having their little talks, and the statesmen are standing up there talking, and then who stands up and says, oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Jones, that's outside the scope of the, you know, and And, you know, it was, you know, the answer, of course, was, well, that would be, you know, Robert's Rules of Order. You know, that would be ruled as non-germane. That would be, and I'm saying, who decides what's germane? The very people, Lloyd, who are telling me that they can control this convention to specifically limit it to amendments that limit the scope and power of the federal government are saying in the next breath that one of the amendments they need is a term limit on U.S. congressmen and representatives, which, am I wrong? That increases the scope and power of the federal government. So who's going to say to these people, hey, wait a minute, it's up to my state. You're increasing the power of the federal government. You're not decreasing it. That's out of here. When the very people who are saying they can limit this thing to just that are the same ones saying, oh, we need an amendment to where we have a federal law that says my state can't send the same guy to Congress two times in a row.
No, you get it. I mean, the lawyers, Lord love them, they're going to get rich off this, aren't they? Because the lawyers just can't. They're salivating over all the possibilities of the endless lawsuits that they can file.
Yeah.
And frankly, it's absurd. The question that I generally ask those, you know, the convention people that believe in this approach, the Convention of States approach, and even the Goldwater approach with the balanced budget restriction, I ask them directly, would you oppose the convention if it were unlimited?
Exactly.
And they will typically say, yes, I would. I would not favor an unlimited convention. By unlimited, in other words, no restrictions on the amendments. And I'm saying, well, then you really, you're part of the problem. You're not actually part of the solution. The truth is, well, that's a very minor concern. An unrestricted convention is not the big bugaboo that philosophically claims it would be. It's not. It, frankly, North Korea could propose amendments to the Constitution tomorrow. So what? We're not going to pass them. What's
right.
the big deal? It's
there
not
you go.
As big a deal as you think. You know, yeah, go ahead. Let George Soros propose an amendment. So what?
Yeah.
You know, we ain't going to pass it in Missouri, so it's dead on arrival. The biggest risk that we face, and we have got to start recognizing this, we have a Constitution that's in got problems right now, people. The Constitution is in serious disarray, and you won't come to grips with the fact that the House is on fire. That this isn't a situation where we're saying, oh, the House is fine, maybe we'll add another, you know, room to the House. No.
Yeah.
The House is on fire. The Constitution is not being followed. Almost everyone agrees, both left and right. We must repair this thing. And the worst thing that can happen to you is to go to a convention and not know what the heck you're doing and have no solutions in mind. You are sowing the seeds for a dictator like you've never seen before.
Yeah,
you're absolutely right. Because they will throw up their hands in utter frustration and say, well, that was the last thing we could try and that didn't work. I hate it when people say, you know, this is the most important election of our lifetimes. If we don't win this one, it's all lost. No, it's not all lost. I've been in plenty of these elections, and you know what? I lost several of them, and it wasn't all lost. There was always another election. So, yeah, you can lose a Super Bowl. Life goes on. All right? That is reality. And the biggest risk is to put all your eggs in the basket of this convention, act like it is a panacea in and of itself to solve the problem, and basically you have no other idea what's going to happen other than we're going to have this convention and nothing good comes out of it because you don't even know now what you were trying to accomplish. All I ever hear is term limits and balanced budget amendment. That's all I ever hear.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're absolutely right.
Neither one of those is going to fix this problem.
Nope.
Okay. I mean, that, and they want to hear that because, you know, they get their head buried in the sand. We got term limits for a president already. Did that fix the problem of an out-of-control president? No. All right? We got a balanced budget amendment, and I have yet to read a single one that addressed the Federal Reserve as an issue. These guys can print their own money at will. All right? And you think a balanced budget is going to stop them.
Yep.
You're not addressing the real problems, people. And obviously we're not ready for a convention if we don't have these kind of discussions. I am hopeful that a petition approach would get us back to keep our eye on the ball and focus on what we need to focus, which is what amendments do we think will really work? And the SRA is right up there. Sorry. I've never seen a better amendment idea than that one. I keep telling people that. If you got a better one, I want to hear it. Otherwise, shut up. You have nothing to add to a constitutional discussion. Okay?
Nope.
If you got a better one, fine. Then you get to play. But if you don't, if you can't ante up in the poker game, you don't get to play that hand. You got to ante.
Yeah. I am. I want to dwell on this here for a moment, though, Lloyd. Something that you say and something that you've said on this program several times since you've been here, something you and I have discussed offline before, and that I agree with totally. This is a tightrope walking game, this convention thing. This is absolutely, and I've said before, you know, the amendments that have destroyed the Constitution, the real critical points in our country, they occurred at and specifically because of a unique point in history where nexus came together, where things just merged together to allow that to occur. And I don't think we can overemphasize the point you made a moment ago, and that is to go into this convention and come away empty-handed is, you know, Lloyd, you're the brilliant historian. You're the brilliant historian here. Tell me what would have happened had they come away from Philadelphia empty-handed on that last try. We would have been torn apart by the European monarchies. It would have been over. If they had come away from Philadelphia empty-handed, it was all over.
Yeah, clearly the articles, well, the debt couldn't have been paid, that's for sure. So you have an entire army now, and the debt would have collapsed. So the federal, whatever the Articles of Confederation were trying to accomplish would be destroyed. At that point, you're going to break into 13 separate states.
Yep.
All right. And you might get coalitions forming, but you're not going to form a single union. You couldn't put it together when you had George Washington there and some of the finest minds in America, and you could not get a constitution that everybody could agree on.
That's right.
So you're going to break into separate countries. Once you do, then Europeans are going to start meddling again. Britain's going to come back in.
Yeah.
You know, France is going to come in.
Yeah. And you need only look at 10 centuries of 13 different countries on the same continent, to find out what that brings about. And Madison talks about this in the first four Federalist Papers. I mean, he consistently points to Europe and says, what happens when there are 13 sovereign countries in such a small area? And it's just century after century after century of warfare and strife, and that's what we get if they come away from that Philadelphia Convention empty-handed. And I say we get nothing less if we come away, if we, like you say, put all our eggs in one basket. If we call this thing together and come away empty-handed, I think we're screwed.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always hesitant to consider, but I just don't see much good. What I think would happen, honestly, if you went into that much chaos, is the final death knell by the plutocrats. I mean, I view the progressive elite, cultural elite plutocrats to be running the show for the past 100 years. That may not be how everybody else sees the politics, but I see a definite ruling class elite that has been growing since the progressive era.
I see it even worse, Lloyd. What I see is unlimited fuel for the fire of the secessionists and for the nullifiers. I see us coming away from this thing with absolute gasoline poured on the fire of secession and nullification.
You know, I agree with you. I think that you also fuel the extremists. I think that is true. The secessionist type, too. They, frankly, don't really like the Constitutional Convention. They don't. They constantly talk about the Articles of Confederation with fondness and as though even the original Constitution was a betrayal of the nation almost. And
right.
So, you know, their vision is very different than mine there. I'm closer to Madison. And they're naive if they think that it's going to result now in this beautiful utopia of 50 separate states. Dream on, me. I mean, I believe more likely is you're going to get a dictatorship come out of that. The American people are actually, they don't like to be broken up. We actually, we like our state pride, but we also like our national pride.
Right.
We are truly a federalist nation, and what the founders came up with out of Philadelphia is nothing short of genius. It is a miracle. It is an incredible achievement. I praise it myself. I am in awe of it. I'm not trying to disparage what they accomplished. Or try and belittle how difficult it was. I mean, there was a fugitive slave clause. We forget this. It was put into that Constitution. It's not because Ben Franklin wanted it there, okay?
Right.
It's because it was a necessary compromise. And I am fully prepared that if we have a convention this time, we may face such ugly compromises, things that
That's right.
And I would not want. We would not want in that amendment. Whatever comes out of that convention, there may be some amendments that we look at it and go, I mean, Nancy Pelosi says, all right, I will give you your SRA, Mr. Sloan and Mr. Gort, but you will give me a right to abortion, or you will give me some other filthy thing she's got in mind.
Yeah.
Who knows what it is. I can't even speculate what she might come up with. And we then face hard trade-offs, just as Franklin did, just as Madison did. Not things they wanted, but things they had to give up in order to get what they did want. And, you know, that's not easy. But that is why that convention was nip and tuck all the way through. And the very strong disagreements occurred between the founders over a lot of this stuff. We tend to lose sight of that, especially in historical perspective.
And
yeah.
And you know what? I mean, I agree with you 100%, and I would go further and say that just as tough as coming up with those compromises and coming up with that Constitution, just imagine. I mean, all you've got to do is read the Federalist and Anti-Federalist papers to imagine that the difficulty was just beginning. I mean, coming out of that convention with a Constitution that endorsed slavery, coming out of that convention with a Constitution that only gave the Southern states partial representation for their property, and then getting that ratified. What a challenge. What a feat.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I wish people read the Anti-Federalist Papers. First of all, they don't even read the Federalist Papers anymore.
Yeah.
That used to be standard. I mean, if
you
looked 100 years ago, American students in high school education would have all known the Declaration. They would have known Washington's farewell address. They would have known the Federalist Papers and might even know de Tocqueville's Democracy in America. This stuff was taught routinely.
Yeah. You're right.
We can't even spell these things today. I mean, you know, I shudder to think, and I'm not saying all those have to be memorized or anything, but reading the Anti-Federalist and Federalist Papers, you're in awe. I mean, you just read them. And they're 18th century language, so they're hard to read, but the ideas there, the quality of the debate, it's inspiring. And I hope that we are capable of that again. On my best days, I certainly believe we are, and I do think we can do this again, but it needs to be more public. In a sense, you were right that the real debate begins after any convention and after the amendments get proposed,
right?
Because that's when you got to go. That's when the debate over the Equal Rights Amendment was. It was state by state. That's a healthy process for the country. I don't know how much time we have as a concern. You know, we do seem to be approaching some serious crises now, and people don't make the best amendments during crisis.
No, you're right.
Not if they haven't thought about it beforehand, that's for sure. They really have got to have given this more thought. And since I am not a fan of the term limits, I'm not an opponent necessarily, but I'm just telling people if those are the best amendment ideas you have, you really probably shouldn't even bother. There's no evidence in my mind, I'm not at all convinced, that that's all we need to do and the Constitution's going to be fine. Given the breakage in the Commerce Clause, I mean, in Obamacare problems, in Roe v. Wade problems, just the whole destruction of federalism and the out-of-control nature of the federal government, we're going to need a lot stronger amendments than just balancing the budget and term limits.
No,
that's nothing. It's just trivial, people.
I mean, you can look. I mean, just to see how corrupted the system is as a whole. I mean, you can look to all the number of states, including our own, that have term limits, and I mean, look to Jefferson City and see what has term limits done, you know, to keep that seat from passing from one crony to another one. I mean, nothing.
Yeah, I agree. The term limits is treating, and I'm not necessarily opposed to term limits. I think you can make a case for them, because if you're going to have term limits on the president, then having them on Congress does make some sense to me. But it hasn't fixed the presidential problem. It hasn't fixed the problems in Missouri. The elections are still way too money-influenced, way too controlled. And frankly, the two-party system is something I think we need to look at, and I question it. And I think maybe we would be better served by changing the rules of the elections so that we could have more multi-party system. A lot of these parliamentary democracies, I mean, we tend to not look at them as better than ours, because we don't look at anything as better than ours.
Well, unless we're Obama, then we look at everybody as better than us.
These countries are more socialist than we are, so we look at their socialism and say, you know, well, they're certainly not better than us. I agree with that assessment. I'm not disagreeing with that. But you're wrong to think that they aren't more democratic. In a sense, those societies actually do represent the majority of their citizens better than ours does. Ours does some terrible things like TARP bailouts and eminent domain abuse and things like this that the vast majority of Americans can't stand, frankly, and it still goes through because our system is very much controlled, I believe, from the top. And the two-party system, don't kid yourself, it contributes to that. These presidential elections are a joke to me. But, you know, that's me. So, these are the kind of discussions we need to have. And I don't know if we can fix the presidency easy at all, but I do think we could fix congressional elections, change some of the ways we do that without even amendment. The idea I would use, I would not start in Congress with this, but it's an idea called cumulative voting. And I'll just say, you know, just to get people thinking about these kind of ideas, we have eight House members in Missouri. So we're broken into eight districts, and it's all winner take all. We don't have to do it that way. The Constitution does not require that it be done that way. What we could do instead is give everybody in Missouri eight votes. Okay? And then you can vote for eight different people if you want, or you could vote all your eight votes for one person. And we take the top eight vote-getters, and that's our Congress. That's from Missouri. Those are our representatives. What that would do is break up the two-party system, and it would assure blacks, for example, without gerrymandering at all, but say if blacks ran just one candidate statewide, then all the blacks could put all eight votes for that candidate, and they'd win. They'd get a seat. And we wouldn't have to gerrymander any of that stuff. And, the pro-lifers could say, the gun people could run a really strong gun guy and say, look, all of our gun people, we want this guy in Congress for sure. Put all your eight votes on this one person. You'd have a heck of a gun guy before you were done, right?
Yeah.
I'm just thinking outside the box, but I want people to understand it doesn't take I don't need term limits for that. You know, I don't need any of these other reforms. I can do things that would be interesting to try, and we in America just don't think about this. We literally have just taken all this stuff as fixed. Our good political thinkers are not thinking in these terms. They're trying to do campaign finance reform. I mean, that's all you ever get from the left is like, well, let's restrict the money or let's publicly finance. that ain't going to solve it either, people. You're very naive if you think that's going to solve this problem. It's not. But here's the left fixated on those answers. Here we are fixated on term limits mostly. We need better solutions than that.
Right. Okay, that's... Yeah. So,
and we need
what we're going to...
Before we hold a convention, No,
convention first. Convention first, and
shoot first, aim later. That's exactly how it feels to me. Yeah, convention first, solutions later. Don't worry about it, Lloyd. Have faith, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, right, okay.
We're going to take our first break, and when we come back, we're going to switch the topic of conversation here a little bit. Going degree by degree, and we're going to talk a little bit more in depth and a little bit more in detail about the specific methodology of the state repeal amendment before we actually get further into the state repeal amendment. The way we are actually doing this and presenting that as an alternative to the convention method. We'll be right back.
Come springtime, so let me hear you say, my love, I'm gonna stand my ground. They rise to me and blow them down.
Have you joined Missouri Grassroots Coalition yet? The results of the 2012 election proved that the grassroots conservatives need to work harder to make their voices heard in government. The best way for Missouri conservatives to make their voices heard is to join together within the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Network and show our elected that we are a strong, unified, conservative voice in Missouri. Go to the website, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and click on the Join tab. Give us your contact information so that we can keep you updated on the latest developments in Jefferson City and beyond. Also, sign up for grass fire alerts so that you can get immediate notifications when we need to call grassroots conservatives together in action. Use the MGC network to help your grassroots organization speak with a louder voice, combined with grassroots groups across the state. Together, we can strengthen the conservative voice in Missouri.
Here we are back with Lloyd Sloan tonight, Harvard-educated economist, and we don't hold that against him. So,
very kind of you, incidentally.
No, thank you very much, sir. actually, I have all I kid and I joke about that. I have really all the admiration in the world for that. I think it's it is in and of itself an accomplishment in my mind.
Hundreds of people do it every year. Tell you that.
Well, what that means is hundreds of millions don't. So
yeah, well, I suppose.
Okay, so anyway, there is a better alternative in my mind, and what I want to do to preface this segment is I want to actually take us to Missouri SCR 38, and I want to just read some of the wording. I'm not going to read all the whereases and for twos that are the first 10 or 12 paragraphs of, you know, whereas you people have screwed us for so many years, and whereas you're not supposed to screw us anymore, and whereas, you know, la, la, la. And we're going to get right down to the nuts and bolts of the SRA. I want to tip my hat again to our guest tonight, Lloyd Sloan. This is actually his wording. This is actually something that something Lloyd has been working on for a decade now, and so we actually owe this, and I don't exaggerate a bit when I say we owe this particular bill to Lloyd. Senator Lamping did introduce this in this session. It did make it to committee, and it has not even had a hearing. We're probably, I don't want to pull the rug out from under you, Lloyd, but we're probably not going to make it this time with 2 weeks left. But we are, and the reason Lloyd and I are talking tonight is because there is a increase in listenership now as the session pulls to an end, especially since we're talking seriously about the impeachment issues and the COS. There is a lot of interest in what goes on here in the last week. SAPA is also moving quickly because of some issues. There are some issues with COS that are going to force it to either fall or rise here in the next 2 weeks. The impeachment thing is coming to a head. There's going to be a lot of pressure by the listeners on that. So what we have here is that we have an increasing audience as the session draws to an end, and we have a keenly activist audience. And what I'm trying to do here, I'm not going to try to deceive you folks, is I'm trying to keep you interested through the summer in this thing so that we get some real push on this in week one of the next session. That's where I'm headed with this thing. I don't think that we let this die just because it tried to. And so I'm here tonight giving this thing what I feel like is its first real push for January. I want to read it to you, and again, we're going to go into the next segment before we tear SRA apart and its nuts and bolts, and Lloyd and I talk about some of it. But I want you to concentrate on the specifics of the methodology of getting this thing done. And here it goes. Any provision of law or regulation of the United States may be repealed by the several states, and such repeal shall be effective when the legislatures of the representative majority of the several states approve resolutions for this purpose that particularly describe the same provision or provisions of law or regulation to be repealed. A representative majority of the states is a majority of the states, also having together a majority of the representative of the Congress, and be it therefore resolved that should Congress fail to act after 2/3 of the several states petition alike in substance for a state repeal amendment, then a convention to propose amendments under Article 5 of the United States Constitution shall be the proper course, and that delegates to such convention should be selected by the legislatures of the several states. Now, this is what we call the petition approach for getting an amendment. So what we've done is we've said the state of Missouri asks the United States Senate. Now, flashback with me for just a second. There are two ways to propose amendments to the Constitution. Only one way to amend it, and that's for the states to amend their Constitution. But there are two ways to propose said amendments. One is for the legislature of the federal government to propose that there be an amendment to the Constitution. And the other is for the states to so propose at a convention. What the petition approach does is it says to the United States federal legislature, we would like to see you propose this amendment. We would like to see you propose this amendment out to the states. And we in Missouri are requesting that you do so. Be it further resolved that the state of Missouri reserve its further right to petition in the same manner for further amendments. Be it further resolved that copies of this resolution be forwarded to the legislatures of all the several states, inviting them to likewise join in with us in support of this petition. I'm paraphrasing. Be it further resolved that the Secretary of the Missouri Senate be instructed to prepare properly inscribed copies of this resolution and send them to the Speaker of the House, the President of the United States Senate, and each member of the Missouri Congressional Delegation. So what we've said here is Missouri wants you to do this. And at the same time, we're calling on 49 other states to join us in making this petition. And we're telling our representative delegation in Washington, D.C., that this is their instruction. Okay. What, Lloyd, makes this, first of all, in a nutshell, have I about captured the petition process? And secondly, what makes this better?
Yeah, I mean, that is the language, the meat of it at the end. It's about half a page, so people can find it. If you Google SCR 38 text or whatever, you'll get a link there, I think, show up. You can also Google it off the Missouri Senate site as well.
Right.
Yeah, that is the SRA, and the petition approach is fairly mild. It simply says, we hereby ask Congress to do this. I suppose they could do it just because they like the idea, and Missouri asked, you know, Missouri brought it to their attention, and so voila, Congress acts. But it does have a little bit of implied threat in that it does say that, you know, if two-thirds of the states all agree that this is a good amendment, and Congress fails to act, then our next correct step, what we believe is necessary at that point, or justified at that point, is to apply for a convention, and that's what we'll do. So, you know, it's a two-step petition approach. I like it better because it helps to establish, it doesn't put the cart before the horse, it puts the amendments first, which is what I believe we should do. And frankly, there's no reason to get into a discussion about the convention because we're not calling for one. So it's not even an issue at this time, so we're avoiding it and basically saying let's focus on whether or not you think SRA, this particular amendment, is a good idea or bad idea. I would suggest that the balanced budget amendment, the term limit people, all take the same approach. Why not? So, you know, just try a petition, see where it goes, and see how many states agree with you. And I would suggest the left do the same with their ideas. It doesn't really matter. Human Life Amendment could do the same approach. I would take this approach with many different amendments, and we'll see which ones have traction and which don't. And I personally believe the SRA is the strongest of all these because it, more than any of the others, it deals with, I think, the hardest question for people who are amending the Constitution comes from the, I'll say the nullifiers, if you will, but, you know, basically the anti-convention people. If they're not following the Constitution we have now, what makes you think they're going to follow your amendments? Now, that's a perfectly fair question, and I think anyone proposing amendments needs to address that question. You know, you admit that they're not following this one. Why would they follow yours? And the reason for SRA is, we're taking it out of their hands. They're not going to be the ones to decide anymore. We agree with that criticism. What we're saying is the states will now decide, not the federal government. So if Congress isn't doing something we don't like, we will give states the direct power to repeal those things, period. And so this changes, we're essentially agreeing with that criticism and solving it. And that's the genius behind SRA, and it's also, I think, the advantage of the petition approach in a nutshell.
Okay.
Incidentally,
yeah.
SRA doesn't come from me. It comes from James Madison. It's his idea. Richard.
Well, no, yeah. Jim Madison, though, didn't get a hold of Senator Lamping Jim Madison didn't go to Jeff City and and walk this thing around the halls, and I'm going to insist on giving credit where credit's due on this state repeal amendment, Lloyd.
No,
I
will accept that very gracious, compliment. Absolutely, yeah. No, and I'm grateful for the praise. Thank you very much. I mean, seriously, that it means a lot.
No worries. I do want to, before we venture off any more into SRA, though, I still want to deal with this petition approach. And, you brought something up to me the very first time you and I talked about this, and we're going on 3 years ago now, where you told me that what we need, if we're going to get this thing fixed, is a campaign. We need a rallying post. We need a maypole in the middle, something that people can gather around. And you brought up the Equal Rights Amendment at that time. This is exactly the kind of campaign that gave us the 17th Amendment. It's the very kind of rallying, war cry that brought us the vote for 18-year-olds, and that stuck with me, Lloyd. That was the deal. That I mean, just think, if we ever had to go to a convention, and we've used the petition process, the steam is already up. You're not going to be doing this tooth pulling that you're doing now, trying to get states. I mean, if we do this the petition approach way, as you suggest, if we say here is a specific amendment that we want, let's get 26, 27, 28 states on board, and if we had to do that, because after all of this, the legislature of the United States says screw you, then it's already a done deal. There is going to be a convention. There's no two ways about it.
Yeah. If I think so. Yeah. I mean, I think you've laid the groundwork for it too.
Exactly.
I just can't imagine Congress ignoring it. That's
I can't either.
I really, yeah. I don't see that. That has not been their history in the past. And, it doesn't make much sense politically. I mean, you're in a political situation here. People don't recognize that enough, really. And I just can't see the people of Missouri electing a state legislature that's willing to take this step with SRA and then turning around and electing Congress people that are completely opposed to it and are willing
right.
to oppose it tooth and nail. I mean, we have not approached the Missouri congressional delegation yet. I mean, I've been working the state approach, but given that it's died at the state level in Missouri this year, I think it'd be remiss to not push the SRA approach in other states as well as in the Congress, and maybe take it to Congress. And you're probably going to find some champions there that can take the ball and run with it. And so maybe
right.
Rand Paul in Kentucky, maybe Mike Lee in Utah, maybe Ted Cruz in Texas. These are all people that I would expect to say, okay, this is a cool idea. And if the Missouri legislature didn't see fit to do much with it, I mean, it breaks my heart because I had enough state pride that I would like Missouri to have led this fight, okay?
Right.
It'd be very, very disappointing to me if Arkansas picks it up and does something with it next year or Kansas or whoever, and they take the ball and run and our guys dropped it. Basically, our guys were in the driver's seat and didn't do anything with it. And that's kind of sad. Yeah, I mean, it is as a Missourian sad, but it's not necessarily sad for the country. We need to think in a bigger terms than that. But, yeah, that's where I'm at. I definitely agree with you that it doesn't look good for this session. I haven't given up totally either, so I want to give it every benefit of the doubt. But we don't even have a hearing schedule. I've made several calls on it, and I assume other people have as well. I don't necessarily hear about all those. But, and there's other fish to fry. I understand that. People have other priorities. But I hope that we can hit the ground running next January on this. It has a little bit of a leg up. Having been filed already, we can say, look, let's really do something with this next year.
But if it happens in another state instead, I mean, I haven't worked outside Missouri on this much at all, and I haven't tried to work Congress at all. But I think
right.
the time is coming when to put all of our eggs just in one Missouri basket is insane.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's giving, I'm afraid that's giving our Republican legislature just a little, in Missouri, just a little bit too much, you know, control over the whole process. And yeah, I won't get into that. you know, it's whether they should be the you know, I'm sorry they didn't see the advantage of it and actually lead the country on this.
Oh, and they well, and they may still.
They may still. I agree.
And I'm with you. I'm with you. I would like to see us do this in Missouri, but sticking for just one moment with the advantages of the petition method of this, in my mind, one of the other striking advantages, Lloyd, is that, you know, we might see something from Kansas and we might see something from Louisiana, and they might not be worded exactly the same way, and one of them might have might include something where the states could take better control of the federal judiciary, or you know, who knows. One of the advantages, in my mind, is we get a leg up on the ratification process when we do it this way. We open up the debate on what this amendment should say from day one. We don't even risk coming out of a convention or a meeting or out of Congress with something like the ERA, where there's going to be a lot of discussion, because several states, any states that wanted to, have already gotten into the discussion before the language, before the final language got formulated.
There are advantages to letting each state come in with their own language. I didn't write it to where, I mean, at least I didn't envision it to where every state had to agree completely on the language or it didn't count. I think the agreement would be, in general, what we need is an amendment that gives power to states to, in some sense, veto or repeal acts of Congress. Okay.
Right.
And that's the basic idea behind the state repeal amendment, behind what Georgetown law professor Randy Barnett called the repeal amendment, an earlier version, and also behind what Mark Levin calls a veto amendment, which is his proposal number 10 in his book. And these are all similar. I do prefer this approach because I like, you know, the advantage of the representative majority.
Right.
But there are some things that if I were doing it, if I were going to write my mega state, I'll call it state powers amendment. So this is your dream ticket to get federalism back and give more power to states. Then I would do the SRA that we already read. I would undo the damage done by the 17th Amendment. I would get rid of direct election of senators, and I would go back to indirect representation by states and make it one state, one vote in the Senate, and do it that way, with states totally controlling the senators completely, both in the number of them and in their salaries and in how long they serve and the whole bit. I mean, I would really change
right.
that considerably. And then I would also empower states to do the same limits on the jurisdiction of the federal courts that Congress has today under Article 3, Section 2. And I
right.
realize it gets very technical, and people look at that and their eyes glaze over and they don't know what we're talking about. But that would be the ideal amendment proposal to me that could come out of a convention at some point, maybe. There are advantages in having a convention for that reason, that a convention is uniquely positioned to do these kind of compromises and improvements all in one place, rather than just say, well, let's use the magic language that Lloyd Sloan came up with, or that whoever, Randy Barnett or Mark Levin or whoever, doesn't matter. It's very unlikely one person would come up with the exact perfect language. even James Madison. I mean, none of the words of the Constitution came from James Madison that I'm aware of. I don't think he wrote any of it. He's probably the number one source of ideas for the document.
Right.
And the truth is, there are many authors for the Constitution. That's a fact. And that's the way it should be, frankly.
Right.
That's correct. That's not incorrect. So we really don't want people working on this to have so much pride in authorship that they refuse to change the words. I mean, that's just not, I view that as counterproductive. That's not what you want in this kind of process. I mean, I used Randy Barnett's legal language because I'm not an attorney. So
right.
I freely borrowed from him, and I added the representative majority, for example. I took almost nothing from Levin. I did not think that his language was good, and I frankly didn't like his formula either. But I do think it's important that he does list this amendment. I mean, he is the best known of all those who have thought about this stuff. I mean, everyone's heard of his book, and everybody's kind of seen his proposals. And so he's given it the biggest push so far, and it made his short list. It is number 10 on his list. So I think that all these things come together, and it's good. That's all to the good.
I agree. And I want to, we're going to wrap up here pretty soon. So I want to say, I really do. I'm serious. I want to keep this thing on the front burner all summer long. So I want to have you back at least once a month. And even if we say just all the same things we said tonight, even if we just do nothing more than say to a different handful of people, a month from now, what we said, a month ago. I want to keep this discussion open. I want to keep this discussion going. I want to keep this thing on the front burner all summer long. I want people to be thinking about this because I really, really think that this state, I agree with you. It's in my top three. You know, it's not my number one, but it's in my top three, and it's my top three, folks, are, I'll repeat one more time, are the only three amendments we need to get out of this convention. We don't need any of the other crap. We don't need the term limits or the balanced budget or the right to life or any of that other crap written into the Constitution of the United States of America. But we do need three amendments, and in my mind, two, and I'm going to even quit saying number one, number two, and number three. We need these three. And in my mind, two of those three, repeal 16 and repeal 17, do nothing but undo the damage that has been done to the original document. And in my mind, and I know in Lloyd's mind, the third one, the state repeal amendment, actually puts in place a fix for a deficiency, in the Constitution. I know that that's sacrilegious to some of you folks to believe that there could actually be a deficiency in the holy word, but there is. And in my mind, two things have got to be done to undo some of the damage done to the original, and one thing has got to be done to actually fix a deficiency in the original. That is the state repeal amendment, and it is in my mind something that we have got to keep working on. Lloyd, what do we need to do to get some dialogue on this? I mean, given the fact that at least for this term, Missouri is not going to print copies of a past resolution and send them to 50 states, and is not going to print inscribed copies of the past resolution and send them to Billy Long and Roy Blunt and Claire McCaskill. What do we need to do to maybe get some expanded coverage with this thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think to get the grassroots involved, I'd like to see more Tea Party organizations and more grassroots organizations, Republican clubs, whatever, Democrat clubs. But I'd like to see debates on maybe the forum on a topic. What are the top three amendment ideas that you think we could use? You know, how would you improve the Constitution, and how would you restore it and bring it back, you know, and give it some teeth again? And there are these kinds of discussions, and for callers to call in with their ideas and say, you know, well, this is the best one I've heard of. That kind of thing, I think, pushes the ball forward a lot. And when that's in the public discourse, and you just go to the meetings with these representatives and say, you know, you talk about the Constitution a lot all the time. What are you going to do to fix it? I mean, you know, what specific proposals would you make? You know, Roy Blunt, you talk about getting back on the Constitution. What does that mean? How would you get it back? I mean, aren't you the one passing the laws that are getting us off? You know, come on. How do we give this thing some teeth again? And so these kinds of discussions will push the ball forward always. You know, and part of it is just push Levin's book then. I mean, read Levin's book and talk about that. Put it in that kind of a context. I'd be more than happy to come to any group and talk about that. I've read the book, and I have some improvements in mind, as do you. Levin talks about repealing 17. That also made his short list. He does talk about repealing 16. That made his short list. He actually talks about another amendment idea that I've heard Scalia get on board with, and which I also think is important, because I think the way that we amend the Constitution itself is flawed. And this three-fourths of states approach is, in my view, the wrong formula. And that also should be addressed. Now, that's a very abstract issue. It's very unlikely that that issue could get fixed any other way than a convention, just because it is so abstract. But at the same time, it's worth talking about. The reason it hurts us, incidentally, to have three-fourths of states as the standard is that it gives the courts a stronger role than they should have in cheating this document. And,
right.
You know, that's the temptation always, is that because the thing is so hard to amend, that justifies in the minds of these elite judiciary types and these living, particularly the living Constitution people, that the proper way to do this is just to have the court cheat it. And that's what we do continually. And we justify that because it's too hard to amend it. Well, that's not much of a justification, okay?
Right.
And that, unfortunately, well, over time, that logic has worked as a cancer on the whole country. And I think Scalia was very correct about that. He didn't offer any proposals. You know, he just made an observation, that's all. We've got another Supreme Court justice out there. What's his name now? Was it Stewart? I mean, he's got some amendment proposals too. One of which I really don't like, and that was to change the Second Amendment and weaken it. But you can see that at least people are thinking about it and they're throwing their name into the hat. I think there's no chance whatsoever that you could ratify a weakened Second Amendment. I mean, I can name 13 states right now. But that's something, what you have to realize is that's something that the left may say, okay, I'll give you your number one. Your number one is you want to get rid of the 17th Amendment. Okay, I'll give you that, but you've got to weaken the Second Amendment for me. And these are the hard choices. These are the ones that you agonize over and just go, I don't know if that's worth it to me or not. I'm not sure. That's exactly the questions that we face, and we need to prepare our minds for that. And more public dialogue of this is actually helpful to me. But we may be in a situation where the Constitution is too brittle in the minds of too many Americans. I mean, this is something harder for me to judge, and I see that there's a lot of people just scared to death to touch this thing. And just like we have living Constitution people that are clearly a problem, and they simply believe the Constitution is whatever the judges say, we have what I call constidolaters out here who worship the Constitution as if it were perfect. And so to them, any change to the Constitution, well, that just destroys its perfection. They think you're trying to change the Bible or something. No, you're not changing the Bible. You're changing a Constitution that was never perfect a day in its life. and it once had slavery in it, people. So it has never been perfect. It's been amended 27 times, for crying out loud. It didn't even contain a Bill of Rights at the beginning. Do you really think that it was perfect? It wasn't. And the founders never made that claim, so I don't know why you're making it. I do agree that, you know, it's a dangerous thing to change constitutions. You need to go slow and steady. You need to have these discussions and talk about the problems. But I can't believe that anybody on our side would think that an unlimited income tax is a good idea. you would think that, when I say our side, I mean small government people. So I'll clarify that. But no small government, no limited government person thinks an unlimited income tax is good. We insist that that be changed, and we insist that that unlimited tax is broken, period. And that 16th Amendment has got to be changed.
It does. Okay, we're going to take our last break. When we come back, we're going to touch on two things. We're going to touch on where we're going with this thing from here, and then we're going to talk about Freedom Talks coming to a town near you with one of your favorite participants, Lloyd Sloan.
You go fast and wrong for right and right for wrong. People on the example that are just so long. I don't have the gift of the prophecy, telling everybody how it's gonna be. There's a wildfire catching in the whip of the wind. It's not a complication like this has never been.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
Okay, we're back. We're back with tonight's special guest, Lloyd Sloan. I want to lay the groundwork. I mean, this just occurred to me as Lloyd was talking. So I'm sitting here right now and preparing the format as we talk for next Saturday night show. I want that to be it, and I'm going to be pushing it all this week, and you folks who are listening tonight or who tune into the podcast, be prepared to do this, and that's what I want to do next week, exactly what Lloyd said. I want all of next Saturday night's discussion to revolve around you bringing your one favorite idea for what we need to do to the Constitution, your one favorite idea, your single favorite idea for an amendment to the Constitution. If you're a liberal, call in with your idea. If you're a conservative, call in with your idea. If you're neither of those people, but rather someone who likes smaller government, then call in with your idea. And that's what we're going to do next Saturday night. We're going to dedicate the entire show to hearing from you about what your one favorite amendment would be. Okay, 2 weeks ago, I believe, maybe 3 weeks ago now, because when you get as old as me, time just kind of squishes all together. I attended the initial Freedom Talks, the inaugural Freedom Talks. Kurtman was there. Sloan was there. Who's that other guy?
Jim
Lemke. Jeez, how did I forget that? Jim Lemke was there.
The visionary behind it, I'd
say. Oh, absolutely, yeah. And I've got Lamping written down here on this paper in front of me, and that's why.
David Linton is the other speaker.
We were talking about Lamping earlier. And that's why I could not get Lemke's name because I had Lamping stuck in my mind. We were sponsor for SCR 38 that we've been talking about here for a couple of hours. But anyway, back to Freedom Talks. The first thing I wrote, I've got 3 pages of notes here from that thing, and the very first thing that I wrote, and the very first thing I said that very night, I did a show where I kind of critiqued what I had been to. Talked about ways that in my mind it could be a little bit better and then heaped lavish praise upon it because I think it's one of the greatest things that's moved across the state of Missouri in a while as far as seminars and get-togethers and basically schooling. But the first thing I wrote in my notes was this thing is going to get longer and it's going to get better. Now you guys have done what, 3 of them, Lloyd?
We're going to do the third one this Saturday in St. Peter's, Missouri. It's on the St. Louis side, on the east side. It's right west of St. Charles. This will be the third one scheduled to this point. And then we'll do more after that, but I don't know where they'll be. They'll be around the state. You just keep moving all around the state.
So this thing is coming to a town near you. I saw quite a bit of social media reaction from people who went to the second one, and it was all positive. I want to, first of all, get the word out to you folks. This thing is coming to a theater near you. And you've got to make it out to this thing. It is absolutely phenomenal. I liked Kurtman's the highlight in my mind of Kurtman, and the one thing that he needs to spend more time on because it's something that people just don't get, and Lloyd doesn't realize it yet, but he and I are going to get together some night and spend 2 hours discussing just this, away from politics. What does economy mean? What is the meaning of economy, of economics? And then what are the different ways that government tries to control the economy, and what are the downsides of that? And what is a free market, and what are the up and downsides of that? We have people out there, Lloyd, who daily spew out words like free market and capitalist and economy, who really don't have a grasp of what they're even saying, except they're just saying some stuff they heard.
Yeah, I'm a stickler for defining terms, so I definitely don't like people using, particularly when you use words like capitalist or even conservative or liberal, political terms, but without definition, they're generally just trying to label people is what they're trying to do, and even the word Christian, which is another label that people use a lot, they would be hard-pressed to define it at times. So, okay, what do you, particularly in a political context, what do you mean by that?
Right.
Do you mean that I can't be a Christian unless I vote Republican? I don't think that's what you mean. So why are we implying that? But yeah, I get you. And economics is clearly half of politics. There's no doubt about it. And I think Representative Kerman in particular does a good job of showing how, of all the liberties we've lost, economic liberties are probably the most serious ones that we've lost over time, and we don't tend to even think about them. And he performs in his speech, which I thought was excellent, a kind of thought experiment, that what is the difference between slavery and being taxed at 100%? And there might be a few differences, but there's not a lot of differences. So if you're taxed at 100%, you are, to that degree, pretty close to slavery. And what that means is, if you're taxed at 40%, are you then 40% a slave? Because it then begs that question, or begs for that question, I guess. Those are really good things to think about, people. And we have truly lost our way in giving government this control over the quote-unquote economy and thinking that's okay and we can play with that and we're not playing with fire. We're definitely playing with fire to give this kind of power to government and take away that much of our liberty. We would never do that in the churches. I mean, you couldn't have religious freedom if the government taxed the churches at 100% and just said, don't worry about it, we'll tax you, but we're going to give it back to you. You just lost your religious liberty, and I think that's fairly clear. You couldn't do that if the government owned all the gun factories. You couldn't do that if the government owned all the newspapers and television stations. So why are we pretending like economics doesn't matter? And, I mean, not to get into it, but we got government owning all the schools. There's a substantive issue. We need to start questioning this a lot more than we do. I realize my position may be a little radical for some people at this point, but I think the talk is very important, and having these discussions is extremely important.
Right, and I don't go into that, folks, because our time is limited here tonight for Lloyd and I to get into a discussion of economics tonight. I get into that for you to have some kind of an understanding. This Freedom Talks coming to a theater near you soon is not just another Republican rally. This Freedom Talks is not just another get out the vote thing. It really and truly is. It is the public discourse. It is those things that Lloyd and I were just talking about here a couple of moments ago. And it is Lloyd giving his presentation about state repeal amendment. And it is it just is. It is a call, you know, I called it preaching to the choir. I guess I call what I'm doing here tonight preaching to the choir. But damn it, sometimes the choir needs to hear things. We've got a caller. We're going to see who this is, Lloyd.
Sure.
Hey, it's Dave. Who's this?
Yeah, my name's Billy D. How you doing tonight?
I'm good. How are you, Billy? Where are you calling from?
Unfortunately, Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania? Why unfortunately?
Oh, well, our Supreme Court here just did away with what was derived from our Fourth Amendment. Police now can search your vehicle calling for a warrant.
Exactly. Yeah, I read that today. Just today, in fact, I was reading that. Yeah. So what do you think about that?
Well, I looked at our state constitution here in Pennsylvania, and you know, our history teacher, that's basically, he was a genius in teaching American history and the Constitution. He could teach you three things in one lesson. It was amazing. But when I started reading it, it's in Article 1, Section 8. That's pretty much gone. You can leave houses. You have to remove person. It doesn't make sense anymore. It has to be rewritten. And then when I went through the First Amendment here, section in Article 1, that's like the pursuit of happiness type of stuff. So, and being able to obtain and have property and protect that property, that all that doesn't make sense either. And what I'm finding is when you remove basically one amendment or remove a long-standing right that we've had here, it messes with the other ones. The other ones get all screwed up. They don't read correctly because it doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
And it's all intertwined. That's the genius of the document. It's all intertwined. If you remove one, it's going to mess up all the other ones. Not all of them, but most of them.
So you're suggesting that if in my mind, it's the most important thing we can do to the Constitution right now is repeal the 17th Amendment, and are you suggesting to me that if we do that, we screw up the whole Constitution?
No, I'm talking about the original Bill of Rights.
Okay.
The most core, the Bill of Rights is the most core thing for America. You know what I'm saying? Once you remove something as important and from literally the beginning of the country, like the Fourth Amendment, then if you read the other amendments when it talks about having privacy and all that stuff and on, protection of person and things like that from government employees, that's throughout different amendments, so they don't make sense anymore.
So where are they going to go in Pennsylvania from here?
I don't know. I think they should at least take our present constitution, put that behind some glass, and they need to fix this one so it demonstrates reality of how it is here in Pennsylvania.
Is there a chance that the Pennsylvania state legislature can fix this faux pas by the court?
Now, we're Commonwealth, and this was done in our Supreme Court. So the only other place it could go from our Supreme Court here in Pennsylvania, my understanding, a Commonwealth Supreme Court is pretty damn powerful. I think the only other place for it to go would be to the U.S. Supreme Court. There's no other court in the land that would hear it.
So you're under the opinion that if the Pennsylvania state legislature should write legislation or even make an amendment to the Constitution which specifically forbade the search of an automobile without a search warrant, that somehow the court would be able to circumvent that?
No, there's nothing. That's gone. Listen, anybody who drives through Pennsylvania, the law of the land in Pennsylvania, and there's no circumventing anything. There's no you can't. Our Supreme Court ruled on this. It's done, over. If you're driving through Pennsylvania and you get pulled over for a traffic stop, and the officer wants to search your vehicle, he does not need a warrant here anymore. So you can't say I don't consent to searches, or it's a pretty big deal. At least to me, it is.
Oh yeah,
now,
no.
You know, if I walk out my door, I don't have a Fourth Amendment no more, man. It's gone. It's just gone. This happened last week.
Yeah. I actually, just this very day, today, was reading about that. And I'm glad you called so that I could get a little bit more insight into that. I'm going to be studying up on that very thing. And something has got to be doable about that. Anyway, is that why you called tonight?
Yeah, well, I've seen, there's not too many shows like this on Blog Talk Radio, so I was just happy to find your show. But, yeah, I figured I'd, let everybody know what's happening in Pennsylvania. When it comes to, what you guys are talking about, with them chipping away at our inherited rights.
Well, see, here's my contention, Billy, and I've made this contention from day one of the state sovereignty show. The Fourth Amendment to the United States Constitution does not extend any rights to you through the state of Pennsylvania. The Second Amendment, for example, that says the Congress can't restrict your right to bear arms, does not say nor mean nor intend that the state of Pennsylvania can't restrict your right to bear arms. The Fourth Amendment, like the Second Amendment, is binding only on the federal legislature. It is up to the state of Pennsylvania as a sovereign entity to take care of protecting your rights from the government of Pennsylvania. It is up to the people of Pennsylvania through their state constitution to put the state of Pennsylvania back in its box. And that's why I'm wondering. That's why I'm wondering if you couldn't, you know, the state Supreme Court certainly has no jurisdiction over the sovereign people of the state. If they decide in their state constitution to say police can't search cars,
well, that's what I'm saying. They would have to change our state constitution to represent what our Supreme Court here just passed.
Okay? I'm saying no, Billy. I'm saying they have to change your state constitution in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
To specifically put the Supreme Court at bay on this issue. They have to change appeal to the Fourth Amendment of the federal constitution. Find in your state constitution, and I'm not familiar with your state's constitution, a specifically protected right in your state constitution that you can appeal to. And if you can't find that, then the people of Pennsylvania need to establish that right within their constitution.
Well, I'm going to call my sheriff on Monday, and I'm going to show it to him. I did leave a message for, I don't know, are you familiar with Sheriff Mack? He actually went to the Supreme Court with a case that he won. Yeah.
Yeah, we had Sheriff Mack on this show here just not too long ago.
Yeah, I actually gave him a call, and, you know, I left a message on what happened here, and I read him, you know, sections of our Constitution where, with the ruling that was just passed, that almost that whole paragraph is gone. It should just be removed, except for Hess.
Do you have that paragraph in front of you, Billy?
Yeah, it's online. Hold on one second. I can give you a link here in the chat room if that's okay with you.
Yeah, that's fine. I was just really more interested in you letting the listeners hear it.
All right, here we go. I mean, fine. I got so many links, but I've been doing so much research over this weekend. Here we go. Constitution of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Okay, here we go. All right, Section 8 on the Article 1. Let me give you the link. There we go. There's a link to it. And it reads just like a book. It's very easy to read.
Section 8. The people shall be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and possessions from unreasonable searches and seizures, and no warrant to search any place or to seize any person or things shall be issued without describing them as nearly as may be, nor without probable cause supported by oath or affirmation subscribed by the affiant. So basically what the Pennsylvania Constitution, Article 1, Section 8 does is reiterate for the people of Pennsylvania a protection almost identical to the Fourth Amendment of the United States Constitution. What your court has done, it sounds like, and I haven't read the judgment or the finding, Billy, but it sounds like what your court has done is the same thing that federal courts have been doing, and that is they have basically either defined and or redefined what is unreasonable, and or defined or redefined what is a person's houses, paper, and possessions.
Well, and persons. And person. Because to me, you know, if you go to up to Section 1, the inherited rights of mankind, you'll see when you read through that and protecting property and reputation, let me see, and of pursuing their own happiness needs to be removed also.
Well, see, okay. Now what you're trying to do, what you're trying to do, Billy, is in my mind is backward, and that is you're trying to change your constitution to make it agree.
Listen, it's already been changed. It's already been done. I didn't do it. Okay,
no, no.
But I. And nobody knows about it because it's not making the mainstream media. If I challenge this, okay, to the Supreme Court, okay, basically it's a two-pronged thing. One, it's unconstitutional. And then two, all right, if the Supreme Court says it is, then this Constitution needs to be changed. At least the information will get out to the American people.
Okay.
Follow?
Why, though, instead of changing the state constitution to agree with what the court has said,
I'm not agreeing. I'm challenging it.
Okay.
Because
so what are you...
It doesn't make sense when you read it now. It doesn't make sense. This,
right.
They have to rewrite this for it to make sense. Okay?
Right.
That's why I'm challenging it.
Okay. But... But the answer is going to be that we're not saying that you're not secure in your person, house, paper, and possessions from unreasonable searches and seizures. We're just saying this is not an unreasonable search or seizure, which is a call for a court to make, which is, in fact, a call for a court to make. What you've got to do, and you've got to start moving your legislature in this direction, in my mind, is you've got to write something into Section 8 that specifically secures your car or any private possession on the public roadway, or however you want to do it. You're going to have to, and then that what that does is it leaves the court then no leg to stand on if they try to, or you've got to write into Section 8 a definition of unreasonable to leave the court no room to wiggle. And that takes care of the problem in my mind. I mean, the court is wrong, okay? I'm not saying I disagree with you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I absolutely...
And see, that's what the problem is this just happened, okay? This
right.
was just changed here in Pennsylvania. So now the only course of action is to try to have it overturned by a higher court. There is no higher court than here in Pennsylvania than our Supreme Court. The next court, the only court that could possibly bring it back, give it back to the people, is United States Supreme Court.
Lloyd,
the higher court.
Can you say what I'm trying to say in better words, I guess?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, I'm definitely not an expert on this issue. My question would be, was several questions, but did the Pennsylvania court decide this based on the Pennsylvania Constitution or the U.S. Constitution? I assume both, perhaps too, since both would apply potentially.
The reason they changed it is because of the ruling recently from the Supreme Court about this issue, and they're adopting the federal decision.
When you say they changed it, what did they change? Was there a previous court opinion that basically they have now reversed and said that's no longer the case?
A long time ago when they wrote our Constitution.
So what the cops were doing in Pennsylvania, previous courts would have held unconstitutional, and this court said it's fine? Is that what's going on?
Okay. If you got pulled over here in Pennsylvania and the officer
Give me the facts.
And the officer wanted to search your car,
mm-hmm.
Okay, he couldn't just do it because he thought something was going on or whatever. He would have to get a warrant from a judge.
Okay.
Like a judge.
And that was
first
because of
warrant.
The Pennsylvania law? That's what they, of their,
our
of what the
right.
Pennsylvania Constitution says? Okay.
Right. And
because
what
under the U.S.
They,
Constitution, I think they do have reasonable search capability. I think the federal courts have said they don't need a warrant to search your car under federal constitutional requirements. Yeah, they can search it. But what you're saying is Pennsylvania used to be tighter, and they actually couldn't even search your car without a warrant at all.
Yeah, I mean, I don't agree with the federal decision. I don't agree with our
I'm trying to understand where you're at now in Pennsylvania. So what the Pennsylvania court decided recently was that they are now bringing their understanding of the Pennsylvania Constitution in line with the federal Constitution and precedents there. Okay.
Not the federal Constitution. These new laws that are being passed by the U.S. Supreme Court.
See, that right there, I'm going to interrupt for just a second, because right there, that last sentence you just said, Billy, is where, in my mind, you've got it wrong. You have conceded when you said these laws being made by the U.S. Supreme Court. You are ready to concede lawmaking power to the court. Take lawmaking power back to the legislature and make a law that renders this state Supreme Court decision moot. That's where I say you need to go. I mean, the lawmaking power, the power to make a new law that says the police can't search a car lies with the legislature, not with the court. Then let the court come back and I mean, once you've taken that word unreasonable out of the court's hands by putting the law making power back where it belongs, I think then you're all right.
Well, yeah, they just should have left it alone. They just should have left it be, and it would have been fine. You know, where an officer needed to get a warrant first. Now,
yeah, but the thing is, when you say left it be, you actually believe that the court got it wrong in regards to the Pennsylvania Constitution.
Yeah,
you believe. Yeah, okay, so the court got it wrong.
I'm missing a right that's here in Pennsylvania that we've had since the beginning.
I understand. So the court is where the mistake lies, not the Constitution of Pennsylvania, but the court.
Right.
So my argument would be, then why fix the Constitution of Pennsylvania? Why not just fix the court instead?
Well, I don't know what the procedure is, okay? All I'm saying is, this is the way I'm looking at it. And I'm like, okay, the Supreme Court went ahead and did this and took basically the Eighth Amendment and I'm sorry, the Section 8.
Section 8, right.
Which is basically the Fourth Amendment. Okay, so that's been done. They did it. So now, as I'm looking at the Constitution, I'm finding all kinds of issues with this, not just this section, other sections too, and I think it should be overturned. Okay. If it's never overturned, all I'm saying is okay then. If you're not going to overturn it, then you need to get rid of this Constitution and write another one. That's all. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying I agree. I'm just saying, you know, you need to change this also. I mean, if that's what the New Deal is,
yeah,
okay.
But if the court, if you're agreeing that the court can then make another decision, I mean, when you get a new constitution, what's going to be different about this new one that the court can't go in and do this to you again? So you're going to do another constitution?
No, I'm saying they already done did it. They already did it. It's done. There's basically no more Fourth Amendment here in Pennsylvania. It's gone.
I get that part. I'm looking at the remedy. What is the remedy to the problem? It's not so much that I don't disagree with where we stand. I'm saying what's the answer?
Yeah,
you know, how do we fix what the court has done?
Yeah, I'm going to start with my sheriff and see if he can explain it to me.
Well, yeah, there's a good start. I mean, sheriffs are good things.
So with the sheriffs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Billy. We're getting short of time, so I want to tell you, thanks for the call. It was very thought provoking, and it was a worthy discussion. And you call back anytime.
All right. Thanks, Dakin. I appreciate it, man.
Sure. So anyway, Freedom Talks is something that you've got to go to. I'm hoping that, okay, Lloyd, you got a little change coming up in these upcoming ones, or there's some evolution going on there?
There is evolution in the format. We didn't feel, I'm sure at the Springfield one, which is I think the one you attended, there was not enough time for questions from the audience.
Right.
And so that, you know, which is what we really want to use it for as well. And so, you know, we've changed the format to put even virtually no lecture at all in the St. Peter's one. So we're experimenting, and we want to just start right off the bat with kind of a roundtable discussion of the various different issues from Paul Kerman's book, from Jim Lemke's book, from the SRA discussion in our education, and then start with that, take questions from the audience as well, or just get into a more roundtable approach. We'll see where that goes. So, yeah, that's a slight tweaking of the approach than what we did before. We'll
okay.
see if that's more interactive, and, you know, keep improving.
Okay, so that's it. I'll be making announcements as time goes along here when that thing is coming to a town near you. You've got to catch one of these things. Lloyd, Lemke, and Kurtman, the great trio of patriots out there pushing hard. It is a great program. Lloyd, thanks for coming along tonight. I want, like I say, I want to have you back through the summer. I really want to stay ahead of this SRA and SCR 38, and I really want us to be ready to push with steam already up when the legislature comes into session next time. Appreciate all the work you've done for it, and I appreciate all the time you give us here on Missouri Grassroots Radio. I love to have you. I'd love to have you anytime, so don't wait for another invitation to call back in and get involved in what's going on either.
Thank you very much. Maybe I'll give you some feedback after the Freedom Talks event. And
great. Yeah, do it, please. Do it.
Yeah.
Do it. Okay, have a good night, Lloyd. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, that's it, folks. We've run a little long tonight, and I don't apologize for that. I think it was a great show. This is really something that's got to get rolling, this SRA, and I hope you have an understanding tonight of what I think, at least, are the advantages of this petition approach over just a convention where nobody has any ideas. And I hope you are ready to call back next Saturday night with your number one idea for an amendment to the United States Constitution. I'm Dave. This is Missouri Grassroots Radio. Good night.
There are so many contradictions. And all these messages we send. Keep asking, how do I get out?